Okay, now it's time to discuss principle number 11 from Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, the subconscious mind. Let's go to Alan.
Thank you, Chris. This is such an important principle to understand the place the subconscious mind has in this entire grand plan that Napoleon Hill has put together for achieving all of your wildest dreams and any success you wish to accomplish. And that is the whole goal of the book. The reason the subconscious mind is so important and understanding it such a vital principle is I see this as what the entire book is mostly really all about, and that is getting through to that subconscious mind with your message. And everything, if you look back, and as you study this book, you'll see so much of it, the vast bulk of it, is geared and tailored towards making this happen for you. The reason is the subconscious mind is truly your gateway to success. You must engage your subconscious mind to reach what you desire and realize your dreams. Now, the reason, I mean, there's no better illustration of how that works than, as I was discussing on one of our other recordings, learning to drive a car. There's a complex series of things you must learn. And I remember when I learned to drive a car, I had to learn how to, I was trying to remember this shift. To stay in my lane, to observe the laws and watch the traffic lights. I was so busy with that, I didn't even know where the heck I was. I get lost. But I remember also eventually it all became ingrained into and a part of my subconscious mind. My body does all that now. I'm more concentrating on where I'm going. I'm thinking about other things and doing other things as I drive. It's making your success plan with the desire to achieve your goals, become a part of the subconscious mind. And Napoleon Hill makes a great point. The subconscious mind is constantly working. It's constantly working on what it's been fed. Now, how do you reach this subconscious mind? Napoleon Hill hands you the key in this very chapter, and that's what another thing that makes this chapter so important. He tells you that the key to reaching your subconscious mind is directed thoughts that are delivered to the subconscious with emotion. Thoughts alone are not enough. You have to activate your thoughts with emotion. It is emotion that makes the subconscious mind grasp your concepts that you want to send to it and start working on it. So I want you to consider emotion the key that opens the gate. And the gate, of course, is the gate that opens to your success. And Hill goes further. He points out there's seven major positive emotions and seven major negative emotions. And this is so important because, as he points out, positive emotions and negative emotions cannot occupy the mind at the same time. Now, that's an important concept to pull out of this principle to make it work for you. You cannot occupy your mind, the majority of your mind power, and the subconscious with positive and negative emotions. Now, that means if you fill your mind with positive emotions, and again, this is not only the key, but the method for turning the key, for acquiring it and putting it to use. If you fill your mind with positive emotions, you'll push out the negative emotions, but there won't be room. And it even gives you the seven major positive emotions, and many of them you'll recognize through reading through the rest of this book. Desire, faith, love, sex, enthusiasm, romance, and hope. And he also hands you the seven major negative emotions. And these are so important because you want to recognize these and overcome them with the positive emotions. And I say overcome them because it's really, I don't know if you've ever had somebody say, whatever you do, don't think about an elephant. Immediately, what do? You think about elephants. It's tough to not think about something. That's why this is such an important key. Here, you want to overcome them when you recognize them. And the seven major negative emotions, fear, jealousy, hatred, revenge, greed, superstition, and anger. Now, of course, with all of these, the seven positive and negative, there's all sorts of subsets and minor variations on them, but those really do boil down to what the seven positive and negative. Now, replace the negative when you see them with a positive emotion, and you'll drive them out. Try and not have negative emotions, and you'll just find yourself probably unable to quit thinking about them. Now, the reason for all of this, Hill discusses a lot also in this chapter about the infinite intelligence. And the point is, call it God, call it prayer, call it what you will, it's communicating your desires, your most powerful emotion-filled desires, into a transmission that will reach your subconscious mind, which is the gateway to this infinite intelligence. And the infinite intelligence is the engine that makes things happen. That's how Napoleon Hill proposes it, and I have to tell you, you can deny it, you can argue it, you can call it what you will. That's how I've seen it work in my life. Infinite intelligence can be considered to be God or any all-powerful being. It can be your inner soul. I call it the driving force within you, because this is what moves you forward to achieve what you're envisioning you wish and desire most. And those negative emotions, if that's what's filling your subconscious mind, that's what it's going to be working on helping you achieve. You really want to achieve fear and jealousy and hatred? Absolutely not. Those don't get you forward in life. So this brings us to affirmations. And this is something that I want to add, because I learned this from the great Ted Nicholas, the power of affirmations. And they can make you feel so silly. They do feel silly at first, but they work so well. And now I think, I hope after seeing this chapter, you'll understand the power of affirmations. They are merely replacing and driving the positive emotions into your subconscious, where there will no longer be room to be occupied by negative emotions. So just try this one every morning. It's really easy. You just want to start your day, and I mean as soon as you open your eyes, with these thoughts. And I mean, say them out loud so that they are not just thought, but driven into you. I am the best. I deserve success. I am moving toward the money I need, and I am attracting the money I want. Just try that for a while, and you'll be programming that subconscious with some powerful, powerful, positive, emotional forces that will help fill up that void so no negative major emotions can get in the way. And I want you to say them with emotion, because that's the whole key to reaching the subconscious. With that, I'll open it up to everybody else for some further comment.
Okay. Thanks. Does anybody else have any comments on this?
Well, I sure do. I think, Alan, you hit it right on when you're talking about, well, and of course it was Napoleon's thought originally, about the emotion being involved in your affirmations. And this goes back to a comment I made on the last principle, saying, focus on the rewards of success, the rewards of success, and you know the modern science of making affirmations, which are efforts to influence the subconscious mind, and it's that subconscious mind that causes you to act and create results in your life and to magnetically attract even other people, events, and things. So affirmations with emotion, the positive emotion, the emotions that you want, the modern science of affirmation says put everything in the present tense, and as you're living it, and you did it real well with your examples. I don't remember exactly, but do you remember exactly what those were, Alan?
Pardon me?
Do you remember exactly what those affirmations were that you gave? Can you repeat those?
My affirmation I ended with,
uh-huh.
I am the best, I deserve success, I am moving toward the money I need, I am attracting the money I want, and those are my own.
And those are all present tense. They are acts in process. So, listener, you could be broke and say those affirmations, and they would be absolutely true. And leading yourself with those thoughts as you program your subconscious mind, you begin to believe it's true. And then you begin to do the actions that you need to actually make it true. And then you begin, because you've got that attitude of increase, to attract relationships with people who are in that cycle who can then help you make it true, too. So, present tense, short, sweet, truthful.
You know, negative affirmations are a reality, too, and I think a lot of times people get caught on the negative, and, you know, not only do they hear other people say negative, but, they get up in the morning and they think, I'm worthless. I'm no good. I can't make any money. I don't like the way I am right now. So those kinds of things have a reverse effect too. If you're filling your life with negative affirmations, those can also be your reality. So you need to be careful about what you are affirming. Make sure you're giving yourself those positive affirmations.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Chris, because you're programming your mind, your subconscious, whether you're aware of it or not, every single minute that you're awake. And most of us are programming our minds negatively. We're not aware that we're stuffing all this crap into our heads, into our subconscious, but we are. So the beautiful thing about what Napoleon says is we program ourselves for success by taking action to program our subconscious. I mean, we put into our subconscious what we want there rather than let it just filter in and get clogged up with a lot of garbage that we don't want there that just comes in without our even knowing it.
It's important to point out, too, Russ, that sometimes those negative affirmations come from others around us.
Oh, and lots of it does, but it doesn't work if we dismiss it.
Absolutely.
But we say consciously, even if we say it to ourselves, I don't accept this. But if we don't say that, then it goes through the filters and gets clogged up in our mind.
Well, remember that the subconscious mind cannot distinguish between a real event, we've discussed this earlier, a real event and an imagined event. So that's why the wording that you were talking about a minute ago is so very important. If it can't not distinguish between reality and imagination, when you say, I have, it thinks it does. And so it functions in a manner unknown to us to help fulfill what it believes is reality. And so that's why the old way of setting goals is that I'm going to have $1 million, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be successful, does not have the impact. Because that just tells the mind someday that's going to happen. That's not the same as telling it what reality is at the moment and letting it fulfill that reality through whatever mechanisms we don't understand.
And you know, the scary part, Don, is it doesn't care.
That's right.
The subconscious mind doesn't care if you fill it with negativity or things that are life positive and uplifting. It doesn't give a damn. It will do upon you, and it will act out what you have programmed it with, whether it's positive or whether it's negative, because it makes no value judgment.
A good example I really like of that is that your subconscious is just like the crew of a ship, and you are the captain. If you tell the crew, hey, you know, head the ship out into open seas, right, captain, we're going out to open seas. No, I changed my mind. Let's turn around and head right for those rocks. Right you are, captain. Let's head for the rocks. It'll do whatever you tell it to do.
And whatever you're thinking about is what you're telling it to do.
Exactly.
Consequences of failure, consequences of victory.
You know, it's important, I think, to point out that this is, you know, we're talking about the conscious mind and how you program your mind. And your mind is not only influenced by what you speak, but by what you hear. And I just encourage you to you know, listen. There's the people who listen to motivational tapes sometimes get a bad rap. You know, people, oh, you listen to those kinds of tapes, you know, but let me tell you, if you fill your mind with the positive thoughts, you're going to think positive, and if you're, especially if you're reinforcing those yourself. And the same thing's true of television. You know, if you're watching programs on TV where they're always focusing on the negative, and you're always hearing about how bad society is, you're going to become a downer, and that attitude is going to infiltrate your thought process. And you know, so you need to make sure that not only are you giving yourself those affirmations yourself out of your own mouth and your own brain, but you need to be hearing the kinds of things that reinforce that. And, you know, like Russ pointed out, if someone gives you a negative affirmation, they tell you why something won't work, or they give you that kind of negative vibe, the negative thought process, take yourself out of the situation and then reinforce the positive in your own head. You know, even if it sounds weird to say it, you don't have to say it verbally, but in your mind, I don't agree with that. I believe what you said is wrong. That does not apply to me. And don't let those thoughts become a part of your process, or they will overtake your mind. And the negative always wins out. You know, if you don't have those positives, that's why people tend to buy newspapers that say there's doom and gloom rather than newspapers that say everything's going hunky-dory. People dwell on the negative. So make sure that you counter every negative with two positives.
I wanted to make a point here, too. I actually attended the same conference that I believe, Alan, when you were referring to Ted Nicholas up on stage doing his affirmations, you'd said that it was kind of silly. And I found myself sitting in the audience watching that and was just like, is this guy okay? I was waiting for the guys to bust through the doors with the jacket, the straight jacket, and put him in and carry him off. But, you know, one of the things that I found is after, and I was doing this kind of in the closet after I'd seen that. I would do it in the morning and, you know, where nobody else could see me doing it and when I was thinking about writing copy or whatnot. But really to try and utilize some of these techniques in your own life, and open yourself up to this because it is voluntary, and that's one of the things that Napoleon points out is that this is a process that you have to want to do and actually voluntarily take part in, and really give yourself a chance to experience the difference. I think you'll be excited and surprised with the results. I know I was when I actually started doing some of this myself, and just the difference in your spirit and the difference in your demeanor when you do this. I think you'll all be surprised if you actually do it. So give it a shot.
Yeah, you gotta bite back on that that feeling that it's silly. And what I should have said was it almost looks silly when you're watching someone tell you to do it, because you know you want to say it forcefully. It's got to have emotion behind it. The neighbors are probably going to wonder about you, but that's okay. You know, just don't worry about what they're thinking about. I have one other affirmation I was going to add to this that I use all the time at the end of this, the one I just listed for you, and that is also that I am fully prepared for a stress-free, highly profitable day. I like to add that one because it really does seem to keep my stress levels down. I find myself naturally finding ways to kind of go around the stress a little bit, and even when there is stress, a little more manageable stress. It keeps it down.
Yeah, you become more competent because of your competent thoughts.
Exactly. And again, remember that the subconscious mind, you're saying something that maybe you've got to forget the fact that, you know, again, remember, as you pointed out, Ted, in my affirmation, I suggested it doesn't say you have the money already. It says I'm moving toward the money I need. And I also added I'm attracting the money I want, which makes you attractive to money. I think one of the other affirmations I heard, a popular one, is I am a money magnet. And to picture yourself, actually picture the money being attracted to you. And as silly as that may sound, because again, you're learning to drive this car, which is your future, your success. But once you start getting that assimilated into the very being, which is your subconscious, you will find yourself suddenly attracting literally all the money you need. It's just, it is almost magical.
Great point. You know, we have about 2.5 to 3 minutes left on this subject. So, does anybody else have anything to add?
Yes, I have more of a comment. Now, we're talking about affirmations and being positive. We're not talking about what a lot of people call positive thinking. In my opinion, you guys may want to correct me, but this is not traditional positive thinking where, you know, I'm Pollyannish. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be well. I'm happy. I'm every day in every way. I'm better. That kind of thinking, I'm not criticizing that kind of thinking, but that's not what this publication is speaking of, in my opinion. And yeah. Anyone have any thoughts about that?
I agree wholeheartedly with you, Don. It's about leading yourself towards a positively influenced life.
Yeah. It's about seeing what you want and what's going to happen. It's giving instructions to the universe to deliver what you need. It's not deceiving yourself into thinking what's here is as good as it's going to get.
Right. I agree.
Well, you know, that same kind of distinction is prevalent in the industry that we all work in. Some people from time to time say, oh, is that another get-rich-quick scheme? And our response, being ethical marketers, is, what are you talking about? Never had a get-rich-quick scheme in my life.
Yeah.
So there's a difference there, even though we use some of the same words. You know, one of the other things I want to get into as we're closing is something, again, that I'm pointing to, telling everybody that, hey, there's more in here and there's stuff in here that even today people don't want to talk about, that Napoleon Hill put in here. He was a mystical person, a metaphysician, talked about mysticism, talked about things, talked about God. What do you think infinite intelligence is? It's that great creative force, the big overall thing. And so now it's important because if you buy that scheme, Napoleon is saying it is through the subconscious that we connect with the infinite intelligence. Now, in that overall big organism, of course, can send us the incidents, circumstances, people that we need. And he's also saying that, and I think that someone's going to talk about this on an upcoming session too, but he's also saying that the subconscious is the receiving station. It's where we get the ideas back from that infinite intelligence. So this one tool, it's just like having a telephone. It's that one tool that you can both get hold of anybody, in this case the supreme being, and you can get messages. I mean, the supreme being can get back with you, which, you know, he doesn't. Not wanting to be religious, he avoids terms like supreme being, and I'm not trying to poke that in there. He's using infinite intelligence, but it is the giant creative force, the way the universe works. We can connect with it. We can receive back from it.
Well, that's a great way to wrap up this discussion. Thanks for listening. Thanks for everybody's participation. This has been a great subject. We'll see you next time. Okay, now we're ready to talk about Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich principle, the brain. Don?
Okay, fine there. This is a chapter that for many people they'll stop and say, what? Because it gets into some topics that may on the surface seem very airy-fairy or kind of far out for most people. Because in this chapter he talks about clairvoyance and telepathy and mind communicating with mind and all this sort of thing. And it may lead you to believe all of a sudden that, wait a minute, I've been studying all these principles that I understand about desire and visualizations and all this. And now we get into the subject of telepathy and clairvoyance. What is this? Well, I assure you that this is, the principles are sound. Your reaction to this doesn't affect the results of implementing these principles at all. This is just another part of his attempt to explain how all of this works and the principles do work. You must keep in mind that this is a very old book. It's a good book, but it's a very old book, and much of the material in it is dated when it talks about the world around us. What was the world around the like when this book was written? Well, first of all, there was a popular awareness emerging about psychology and the unconscious. And that's very valid, and people were very interested in it, and psychology was becoming a topic that the average man was beginning to hear much more about. It was also the time of scientific breakthroughs. This was, radio was absolutely booming. Radio was still new. The industrial assembly lines were giving America better products and more products, and science was king, and invention was king. So people not only wanted to know what worked, they wanted to know how it worked. And so this author is trying to explain in my opinion, is almost unexplainable. So he was trying to satisfy his readers in this time frame and use the thing concepts that they understood, like broadcasting and receiving, to make his points and make an explanation. You don't have to believe in telepathy, and you don't have to believe in clairvoyance for these things to work for you. He gives this an era of scientific credence by talking about Duke University and Dr. Ryan's experiments and so forth, which are largely, Duke has moved away from all of that. They've tried to separate themselves from all those experiments. That time has come and gone, largely unproven. Doesn't say they didn't exist. That's not my position at all, and everyone here certainly may not agree with me. But this was giving scientific proof by quoting Dr. Ryan and referring to Duke University that these things all happen. And things have changed. We know more than we did then. But I want to point out we still don't have the answers. So my suggestion to you is to ignore the hows of this book. Forget about the explanations and the labels. You don't need to explain how this works. Just know that it does work. What you really need to understand, in my opinion, about the brain is that, first of all, you need to know that thoughts have power to regulate your life, to create change, and a strongly held belief is probably one of the most powerful forces in your life, period. You also need to remember that an image coupled with belief that's vividly seen and experienced does affect your performance, and through unknown, undisclosed, undiscovered ways affects the world around us and what we attract into our lives. These principles work. Some of the methods are more clear to us than they were at one time, but they are still largely unknown. But it does not diminish their effect at all. Stop and think about with what we know more about the mind today. If, let's say that you're interested and you're highly motivated to start, let's say, a mail order business. And you decide that this is really what you want to do, and you think about it, plan about it, you imagine it. What happens? Your mind immediately starts seeing things in the environment that you would not have seen before. It's called selective perception. You'll notice mail order ads that you didn't see before. You'll read stories that you didn't would have ignored before in publications on articles. Your selective perception will start bringing things into your awareness to operate on that you never would have seen before. So you will gain new information, you will grow, and more importantly, you will see opportunities that have always been there that you never recognized before. And that happens without any unknown forces. I mean, we understand that much, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. So much more happens than that we can't even begin to understand it. Those thoughts not only bring things into our awareness, like I just described, they cause forces in this universe that we do not understand to be put into motion for our benefit and help us to achieve our goals and our dreams. Practice the principles. They absolutely work. If the mythology he describes turns you off or frightens you, just ignore it. You don't have to understand the how in order for it to receive the benefits. Stay focused on the benefits, and this book and the principles it describes can deliver what you want, what you need, and literally change your life. Okay, guys, do you have any comments about that?
That's great. I can't wait to hear what everybody else has to say. Who's first?
But I'll tell you what, I think that this brain is definitely a key point in Napoleon Hill's philosophy, because basically, when I read this, and again, I'm like Don, there's a lot of stuff that's maybe described in an archaic manner. On the other hand, I do agree that we ought to follow those metaphors, see what he's saying, but I think what he's really saying is that we develop this consciousness, we send it out. Now, Don called it selective perception, which is a scientific, readily acceptable, you know, definition. Elsewhere in this book, Napoleon makes the statement that we are all part of one big universe, and selective perception, i.e., now let's do it, we're broadcasting. We are broadcasting, let's say, to get information, help, assistance, partners, ideas on a new product that we want to create, that we want to put out there. What Napoleon is saying is that in this one central universe, we're all connected, and doing this consciously through connecting with the creative intelligence, in other words, the bigger force, is stirring those other aspects, those other items, the information you need. So, in fact, you will attract it to you. It'll come back, of course, through the same medium that goes out, your brain. Now, you don't, like Don said, you don't have to believe that metaphysical, mystical explanation to understand that, in fact, there is some kind of connection between planets. He refers to gravity keeping things in order. How many times have you walked outside and
and seen rain, anything but falling down. And of course, unless there's an outrageous wind, it's being acted upon by another force. So there are forces, there are methods, and above all, I believe what he's saying here, he's talking about radio, broadcasting, receiving. When I look at it in our modern terms, I say he's talking about tuning in, and that awareness, if it doesn't really affect reality, which it is my belief that it does, it certainly does what Don said, selective perception, and it appears that all this stuff came to you for the same thing. So just tune in, you know.
Well, I'll make it clarify myself just a little bit. I didn't mean to convey that I thought it was all selective perception. I just meant that is one of the things that we do understand the methodology of that we can explain. But there's much more to it than that we cannot explain. Quantum physics is starting to explain some of this by saying that everything is interconnected. Everything that exists is interconnected. But again, you just don't have to consider all of that for this to work.
Well, you know, something you said is so important, I think. He said he and his staff would sit down and put a problem or an idea before them. And that struck me as, you know, not only a discussion of the brain and how they're interconnected, all of us are as human beings, but also the mastermind theory, which is proven to be true, that when people get together and work on a project, when they have like minds and they have the desire to come up with a solution, the solution will be there. I think our minds are filled with so much stuff every day. Thousands and millions of images are hitting us, thoughts that are negative as well as positive, that when we sit down with a group of people, or we're on the telephone with a group of people as we are now, and we're discussing one central topic, we take all this confusion in the mind and we narrow it down and we zone it in on one thing. And when we do that, then our minds can be in accord with each other, and we really can come up with the great ideas and the solutions to any problem. So I think what he's saying about the brain is very, very valid, and I think one of the reasons we don't get as much from our minds as we do is because our minds are cluttered, so that when we have the definite of purpose, when we're definite of what we want to accomplish, and we work with other people who have the same goal, great things can happen.
You know, it's kind of like the when you look at someone who's an athlete, and before a big race, you know, if you're watching the Olympics, they, you know, they're getting ready to run the big track race, and so they'll all line up, but they don't all start talking to each other. You know, they're not asking how their day's going, how their family's doing. They're focused on their one mission. They're running the race for the end prize, to win the race and get the gold medal, and their entire mind is running toward that one thing. Or if it's a football player, you know, a star quarterback, he's not talking to people before the game. He's throwing the ball. He's warming his shoulder up. He's focused on his mission for that time. And I think that with this strategy, with the brain and how that applies, I think that that, like Russ said, your brain is constantly bombarded with all these thoughts. And if you come home in the afternoon and you turn on the TV and you watch TV till 10 o'clock at night and then you go to bed, you've got all those extra thoughts in your head. You've got to focus. You've got to be single-minded. You've got to have that vision. And I think your brain has a big part in that, in staying focused on what you're trying to achieve.
Well, and you know, there's such a thing as, they say that you can tell a person's thoughts by looking at their face. Now, and to a certain degree, it's absolutely true. You can tell when a person's angry. You can tell when a professor is a wacky intellectual. You can tell when a person's pleased, or you can tell if they are a street person living on the street, or if they're a successful person, if they work in an office, work in a plant. A lot of these things you can tell. And so basically, again, we're getting back to consciously deciding with the brain what kind of reality we want to create. And for instance, let's say we decide, since we're all business person and listen to this, we decide I want to create a personality of a deal maker, a joint venture partner, someone who helps others sell their products to my list, someone who's got products of certain quality that I then can offer through other people's lists and make them value too. By golly, just being tuned in, and I'm repeating myself on that, being tuned in, but being tuned in on that wavelength will guide you to do the things you need to do, to put yourself in an environment where you meet the other people, have the other opportunities, and because you're making yourself worthy when the opportunities come, and they will, because you're attracting them, people can see who you are in your face and your communications, then it's just a matter of following up the logical consequence of what you did.
Well, also in your statements, you know, what you say about yourself.
I mean, yes.
When you say, I am, in your example, doing joint ventures, I am going to be a person who puts joint ventures together. Once you make that statement to yourself, but also important is that you make that statement outwardly, it enhances the whole process.
You know, there's the saying, we become what we think about all day long, which of course stems, excuse the pun, from the brain. I'm going to get just a little esoteric here. I hope I don't, somebody can interrupt me if it gets too weird. But if you think about how the mind works, first of all, you go throughout your day and throughout your night while you're sleeping with your dreams, and there are thoughts in there that you kind of wonder, well, why are these thoughts so pressing? For example, you know, something's upset you and you just can't get it off your mind. Then you wonder, well, what's controlling it? Who's in control of these thoughts? Is it me? If it's me, I want to turn them off. But how come I can't turn them off? And so then there must be something else. And the way to tap into that something else so you can control those thoughts, the only way I've found is through meditation. And it's not something that you can actually do actively. And this goes to all problems, all situations. You can never really solve a problem on the same level of which it exists. So you need to tap into another level. So the brain, this can become very complicated or it can be very simple. The simple way to look at it is to experience sitting quietly and just find out what happens. And then all of a sudden these different thoughts creep in and allow them to come in, allow them to go. And it's really interesting because it almost seems like it's something else. And I actually believe it is. But without getting into that, there's a realization that you are not your brain. You are not your body. There's something more complete, something more connected, which leads me to the point I really want to make. And that is, we're all walking around with these brains in our heads. We think that we have, you know, full control of our computers, but we're somehow connected and there's something else there. So if you can allow, relax your mind and let the brain do its mysterious work, a lot of great achievements can happen just naturally. And this is through very passive use of that computer in our head.
That's a great point. We've got about 8 more minutes on this subject if anybody else has anything to say.
I wanted to make a quick point, and I think after reading this chapter, I mean, one of the things that I really love about Napoleon Hill, and I think it shows in this work, is that he was actually searching for the answers, actually physically searching for the reasons why, you know, and open to ideas that other people might not be open to. I mean, that's certainly apparent. There's still ideas in this book that many people today would be reading through and saying, what are you talking about? And just understanding the fact that still today the mind is a mystery, that we only know what's the percentage, guys? Do you know the figure of what percentage of the mind we actually know what it does?
Less than 10%.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I found myself thinking is, wow, what is all that other stuff for? You know, and the fact that he's actually willing to go out there and say, hey, there's a definite purpose for some of this stuff. I still think 100 years from now, we might know maybe what another 2% does. And that some of this stuff was really, really insightful. The fact that this guy's thinking outside the box and actually willing to ask the questions and try to do some of these experimentations with the brain, if you will. I think that's a great model, and I think we need to continue to pursue and to figure out exactly what it does. And I think that you made a great point, Don, when you said, look how long ago this book was written. Years and years ago. I mean, this has been around for a long time, but by applying some of the knowledge that we know today and thinking about it in context of what he really uncovers, I think we can even take it a step further.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to point out another thing that Don had said, and that's that you don't have to know how it works, just know that it does work. And, you know, I don't know how my car runs, yet I drive it around all day. You know, you can benefit from what he's saying here without really understanding the mechanics of why. You know, we don't know why the brain does what it does. We just know that it does do what it does. And we even don't really understand that very well, but we know the results of what happens with our brain when it works. And we know that if we focus on something when you get a new car, you probably noticed this, when you buy a new car, all of a sudden that's what everybody's driving. Well, there were that many cars of what the same kind of car you had on the market before you bought yours, but you become aware of it. Your brain all of a sudden focuses on it. It's what you're driving around in, and now all of a sudden everybody else seems to be driving one too. So I think that it's important to remember that you don't have to try to figure out why your brain's doing what it's doing. You just have to know that it is, and you have to use that to your advantage along with all the other principles that are being taught here.
Good point, Chris. And, you know, again, being able to know that it works, then it comes to the next logical step. How do you work it? And in this chapter, Napoleon mentions his two favorite methods, sex transmutation, which again, you know, it sounds terrible when you just say that, you know, like a transvestite or something. But in reality, what he's saying is take the energy that you would otherwise invest in other things or the cause, you know, when we're doing things for a higher cause, you know, in this case, it's sex transmutation because it's our biggest drive, doing it for our loved ones, instead of going out and playing on the street, we are creating a book or a product or writing a sales letter, whatever it is in our arena. So that's sex transmutation. And then the other one is the mastermind. In other words, getting with other people on a clear target and purpose. Now, it's interesting that he should identify both of these as the preferred methods in the book on the brain, because, again, tuning in, getting results, attracting what you want, and all that kind of stuff.
I think what Napoleon is saying, too, is the mind is always active. It's always working. It's processing data completely. But most people are unaware of what's being processed, and a lot of stuff that's going in there is negative and destructive. So he's telling us when we focus, when we take control of the brain, take control of our minds, that's when we can program ourselves for success.
Well, I think that's really a key, because it's an incredibly powerful tool that unfortunately we don't use enough. In fact, most people, I think, if they really look at their lives, they realize they really go through life on remote control. A lot of the things they do because either their parents do or their upbringing or whatever, their situation. And it really, when you take control of your brain and your thoughts, you have the ability to construct the life that you want. And it really is, you know, there's so much in the world that we cannot control, but it's such a great feeling to be able to control your brain and your thoughts and the direction that you go in based on that. Because really, you know, we can't control a lot of our consequences and a lot of the things that happen to us, but we can control how we look at things and the direction that we go in and the action that we take. So I think it's a great chapter.
Jeff, my mind is telling me, and it's focused right now on the fact that we are out of time for this subject. So it's been a great subject, it's been a great topic, and I hope you've enjoyed it and got a lot from it.